League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
This podcast is sponsored by IQBar. Your favorite clean, functional, delicious nutrition brand is raising the bar with a little help from Thomas Keller, Michelin star chef of the French Laundry. IQBar and Thomas Keller have teamed up to create a salted caramel chip protein bar and yuzu mango hydration mix. With toasted macadamia nuts, rich caramel flavor, and brain-boosting nutrients, this bar is like having a Michelin star meal in your pocket. Pair it with the taste bud tingling yuzu mango IQ mix hydration mix, packed with magnesium and adaptogens to improve clarity and mood. With Keller's culinary excellence and IQ Bar's commitment to great taste and clean ingredients, this limited edition collaboration is simply mwah. And the best part is that 10% of sales go directly to Chef Keller's nonprofit, Mentor, that supports aspiring young chefs. Great taste, great nutrition, great mission. Go to IQBar.com today and enter promo code KELLER20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products plus free shipping. That's IQBAR.com, promo code KELLER20.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
This podcast is sponsored by IQBar. Your favorite clean, functional, delicious nutrition brand is raising the bar with a little help from Thomas Keller, Michelin star chef of the French Laundry. IQBar and Thomas Keller have teamed up to create a salted caramel chip protein bar and yuzu mango hydration mix. With toasted macadamia nuts, rich caramel flavor, and brain-boosting nutrients, this bar is like having a Michelin star meal in your pocket. Pair it with the taste bud tingling yuzu mango IQ mix hydration mix, packed with magnesium and adaptogens to improve clarity and mood. With Keller's culinary excellence and IQ Bar's commitment to great taste and clean ingredients, this limited edition collaboration is simply mwah. And the best part is that 10% of sales go directly to Chef Keller's nonprofit, Mentor, that supports aspiring young chefs. Great taste, great nutrition, great mission. Go to IQBar.com today and enter promo code KELLER20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products plus free shipping. That's IQBAR.com, promo code KELLER20.
Chaluminauts.
Why do we start this way, but then we release it to the public, and no one's going to want to be a Patreon?
I think they will. I don't know.
But those who are patrons,
when you harass
don't ever want to leave.
Oh, hey there.
It's not harassment. It's, you know,
looking
it's an affectionate grumble.
Welcome, everybody, to the Chill Mini for the weekend of, like, November 9th or somewhere around there.
Yeah,
it's just in that area. People have requested for minisodes that we at least bring the date up in the beginning, so those who are listening later know what time this is falling in. So it's like early November, everybody.
Welcome to it. It's an optimistic time-ish.
Yeah, it is. It is somewhat more optimistic.
It's the week of video games.
It's true. We have Assassin's Creed Valhalla coming out,
and the Xbox and the PlayStation.
Yeah. I'm not getting either one of those right away.
I heard Astro's Playroom is going to be the shit.
I heard that too.
I already have an Xbox Series X if I have an Xbox One X, so I'm good on that for now. But I'm going to hold on. I'm psyched for the PS5.
Well, I don't have a for the stories. It's not a huge story. I don't think any of us have. I don't know what you guys have.
I have an update.
Has huge heart.
Yeah, I have an update from a previous thing that we've talked about.
Mine's I'll start this week. Okay. Then this one's really quick, but as always, it's space related.
Perfect.
This is interesting, and simply, it's a new discovery. This comes from the Independent. Mysterious radio signal is coming from inside our galaxy, scientists announce. Mysterious intense blasts of radio energy have been detected within our own galaxy, astronomers have said. Fast radio bursts, or FRBs, last only a fraction of a second, but can be 100 million times more powerful than the sun. Despite their intensity, their origin remains largely unknown. Now astronomers have been able to observe a fast radio burst in our own Milky Way for the first ever time. As well as being closer than any FRB ever detected before, they could finally help solve the mystery of where they come from. Scientists have had trouble tracking down the origin of such blasts because they are so short, unpredictable, and originate far away. But it is clear they must be formed in some of the most extreme conditions possible in the universe, with suggested explanations including everything from dying stars, of course, to alien technology. Later on for this, the detection began on the 27th of April when researchers using two space telescopes picked up multiple X-ray and gamma ray emissions coming from a magnetar at the other end of our galaxy. The next day, researchers used two North American telescopes to observe the patch of sky and picked up the blast that came to be known as FRB 200,428, as well as being the first FRB from our own Milky Way. Yeah, and that's pretty much the story. There's another FRB that we just...
It's from this...
It's come from the Milky Way galaxy. It's the first one we've ever discovered within our own galaxy.
Any explanation of what...
Again, there's no real way
that's
to know.
That's the unfair part of this, is it's like, well, it could either be an alien or a sun. Like, that seems like BS to me.
Well, that's what I mean. Like, does it represent something that we know about? Is there things that we know about that emit this type of radiation? Or is it just like a complete mystery?
No, what it does. It's either a radio wave signal or it's literally a sun. Yeah, like, and that's so dumb.
If the FRB can be proven to come from a magnetar, many mysteries still remain. Astronomers will need to look for the mechanism that allows the magnetar to power an FRB, looking for an instance to understand how it could send out such bright, unusual bursts of energy and X-ray emissions at the same time. So they don't know if it's coming from where it seems like it's coming from. They still don't know how it's happening. So who knows? But it's close. And also, I found that interesting.
The size of it's crazy that we're detecting things from outside the galaxy before we're detecting things in our own galaxy, which maybe that's because our galaxy is younger than other galaxies. And so they've had longer time to send that radio wave out. And I mean, who effing knows? All I know is, judged by the size of the universe, if we got a radio wave frequency hit from another galaxy, those people are probably already dead. That civilization is probably already gone.
Or they like float now. You never know.
Or they don't exist. They've transcended to light beings. You know, whatever.
What is it called? It's the great filter, right? Like the thing where like a civilization within space, an intelligent civilization within space will eventually hit this point where they'll wipe themselves out or they'll push past it and they will go to colonize space.
That's the levels
space.
Of civilization. You know, like we're a zero. Shout out zeros. Yep. What up zeros? Yep. And there's one. And there are ones which are like can travel around their own solar system. And then there's twos, which are like you can go between solar systems. And then there's threes and then fours. And I think there's a hypothetical five, which is like you are a light being.
That's like,
interdimensional.
Yeah.
Potentially what's literally sitting on top of our planet right now.
But the idea is also like a four wouldn't even recognize a zero. We'd be like ants. So there'd be no reason to even interact with us.
Well, that's all I got, boys. Boggles that's my mind. Fascinating little tidbit of discovery in the world of the stars.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So I got a little update for you.
Okay.
Okay.
So if you guys remember in September, I brought up a story about a man in a jetpack that was seen at like around LAX at like 3,000 feet.
I saw a photo of him recently.
Yeah.
He was cruising, dude.
People were like, only in LA, right? So I don't know how I missed this, but back halfway through October, a couple weeks ago,
there was more.
They saw another guy in the air a couple miles away from LAX. But this time, and it's 1:45 p.m., so we're talking about in the middle of the
photos.
Goddamn day.
There are little
day.
Photos of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember reading this, and I think the pilot called it into the radio tower, and the radio tower's return question was, is it a man in a jetpack, or is it a UFO?
Yeah.
And he just very calmly was like, man in a jetpack, and she's like, all right, carry on.
Yeah, no, it's a man in a jetpack. Difference is... that this time the dude was 6,000 feet up instead of 3,000 feet up. That is double.
Damn.
So if we're trying to,
do you need a mask at that? Do you know? Do you need a mask?
I'm sure you need something because you shouldn't be up that high. Period. I mean, like 6,000 feet. Just to give you an idea, this is, I got my New York Times subscription because I actually like reading news that is credentialed and true. The Wilshire Grand Tower, the biggest building in LA, this is six times higher than that.
Wow. Damn. Yeah.
So that's just crazy. Think about how high up that is, first of all.
That's so crazy.
We're getting so close to having our own fucking Iron Man flying around.
You couldn't convince me. You know what? Actually, I'm wrong. I'm pretty sure this is just Elon Musk, right?
Like, literally the man?
He's like, I am Iron Man. Yeah, you know what?
Last time we talked about this, there was Jetman.
Do you honestly think Musk could keep it to himself if it was him?
No, which is why I think he's testing it. And then when he perfects it, he'll be like, I am Iron Man.
Jetpack, bro. And then we go into cyberpunk territory and we don't become the utopia we want.
Do you know what cyberpunk is? It is not utopian, my friend.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. It's not utopia. We don't go to the Marvel superhero route. Go to the cyberpunk route.
I'm there.
But I get Jack's arms and I'm okay with it.
That's true. We could just modify ourselves completely.
Yeah. Well, so 6,000 feet up, right? You got to look at the numbers and you got to look at the realm of possibility, right? So the first option is Jetman Dubai, which we talked about last time.
Yep. Sure.
Which is the one where it's like, looks like kind of like an Iron Man situation, except he has like a plastic hang glider on, basically.
Yep.
Like he's got like hard triangular wings.
But this isn't that guy.
Yeah. No, that's in Dubai. That's somewhere else. But there is SFV, like San Fernando Valley company in LA-ish, that's called Jetpack Aviation. They have, quote, the world's only jetpack. Apparently, it can operate for 10 minutes. It can go 15,000 feet. Apparently, they don't sell them, but they have one. And they have, like you can pay. Apparently, it's good. Okay, so normally it costs $49.50, $5,000 to do this for a day, right? But right now, if you want to fly on the jetpack, it's still the same price, but now it's 2 days. I don't know if that's a COVID deal or what, but it's a limited time offer. You pay.
What does that mean day wise? Like how, if it only lasts for so many minutes.
I'll give you exactly. It's 2 days. Okay. So the first of all, you get a photo in the jetpack with the JPA team. You get a photo alone in the jetpack off the tether. So that's cool. You get a polo. You get a t-shirt, you get a hat, a certificate, patches, and you get a remove before flight keychain. Okay. That's what you get. But what you do, it starts at 8 a.m. each day. There's a safety briefing. You get an explanation, presentation of the controls, flight lesson, safety apparel. You get to wear a flight suit, which you might also get to keep. There's a tether system that they teach you about. They teach you how to fuel the jetpack, safety controls, how to start the jetpack, maneuvers, demonstration flight, throttle exercises, hover exercises, yaw exercises, climbing exercises, forward and backward exercises, sideways exercises, debriefing, flights of the day, photos, and you do that twice in a row.
But wouldn't...
Oh, boy.
I imagine you have to sign a waiver. There's no way that is not just dangerous.
It says the insurance is included in the cost. There's a brochure, and on the website it says it is really safe. So please don't worry about that. We have spent years refining the operation. You will always be on a safety cable and have an instructor that can take control at any time. Will I be required to sign a safety cable
connecting you to where?
Will I be to the ground? I guess.
Yeah, like the that's concrete.
Where you don't want to be. Or maybe you don't go that high up. You know what I mean? Maybe you just
maybe you're right. Yeah.
Yeah.
But still, no matter what, down is bad when you are anywhere up.
You even do like have to sign a safety feet up, waiver.
Down is bad.
You do have to fly a safety waiver, file a safety waiver. It says it would take longer than 2 days to get you to the point of being able to safely fly off tether.
Right, you don't say.
But you get to do it in the photo session, or they Photoshop it out. being attached at all times to a tether system, a horizontal cable reduces the chance of you hitting the ground.
Gotcha. So no matter what, there's a horizontal. Gotcha.
Yeah. Oh, I see.
Right. Gotcha. Okay. I was like, where would they attach it to?
Dude, imagine if somebody was like, okay, it's time for your photo op without the tether. And as soon as they take it off, you're just like, off with the
fucking thing. Here's the thing. What are they going to do? Stop you.
Exactly. What
they
literally
tell you how to refuel it.
Wait 10 minutes. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, wait 10 minutes.
No, I'm dead before 10 minutes,
dude. Like that Morrowind quest where the guy just like fucking lands.
No, dude, it'll be like episode 2 of Mandalorian season 2.
Yeah,
where he activates the jetpack.
Yeah, just takes that dude out.
Yeah. Great.
Lunch is provided. That's good.
Great.
Good.
And the most ominous thing of all, you will wear special apparel designed for jetpack operations. This reduces the chance of burns.
Does not eliminate.
Okay, I wasn't even thinking about your ass burning or your back burning, but now I am.
Yeah, that would scare me, actually.
Places are very limited, but you can book now at jetpackaviation.com. So if you want to...
Only for $5,000.
Yeah, though apparently it's not that jetpack. Apparently it's not that jetpack. Nobody knows of a jetpack that can do this, like where somebody just like goes off into the fucking sky and flies around on a jetpack, like unsanctioned.
That's got to be a rich fucker. That's all. Yeah. It's got to be.
Sure. Also, Jetpack Aviation is showing off a military application and a civilian application for a hover motorcycle called the Speeder.
Ooh,
interesting.
If you go to jetpackaviation.com, it's on the front page. Its mission to save lives. That's what it says.
Okay.
But yeah, that's my little tidbit of news, is that now there's been a double jetpack guy and he's out there somewhere. There's somebody out there with a jetpack in LA, somewhere near us, who's just
jealous of this
winding around willy nilly. There's somebody with a jetpack. That's crazy, right?
Dude, he's the super spreader.
Dude, yeah, maybe he's like COVID. A Johnny Appleseed of COVID.
Right, he's just going around spreading COVID.
That's
in
probably
US.
What it is. We've solved it.
I don't think that's what that is.
Somebody tell the devs. We've solved it early.
A new conspiracy was born today.
All right. As we all know, the elections happened this past week. But that wasn't the most important one.
That was this week? Whoa.
That wasn't the most important one. From Reuters in Seoul, Korea. South Korea. Is being hailed as a major win for democracy in South Korea. After 16 years in exile, an election winner is returning this week triumphantly to claim his rightful place on the front of a green cereal box. The limited edition of Czech cereal sold out within 2 days when it hit online stores following years of almost ceaseless campaigning by enthusiasts. The long road to the cereal aisle began in 2004 when Kellogg's Korea launched a lighthearted marketing campaign for Chex, a 5-grain cereal, asking South Koreans to vote on a new flavor. The TV commercial featured two cartoon candidates. They were vying for the Chex Choco Empire, and the two candidates were the chocolate-favored Checky and the green onion-flavored Chaka.
Green onion checks, dude. What?
Listen, in the world of 2020, where memes are king, you do not play with shit like that.
Well, this was 2004.
Oh, what?
Yeah.
What?
The PR stunt was meant to end with an easy victory for the chocolate checky, but the people did not agree.
Oh, my God.
Votes for Chaka surged past checky, catching Kellogg's completely unaware. Citing multiple votes by individuals, the company halted online voting, threw out duplicate votes, and declared Checky the winner. Chaka fans cried foul and decried Checky's subsequent 16-year rule as an illegitimate tyrant. Chaka remained in the public consciousness via regular hashtag like pray for checks, and he was depicting the onion character as a freedom fighter.
God, to live in fucking Korea where the big election was about green onion checks versus fucking chocolate.
We never expected customers would be this interested in the product after 16 years. Kim Hyun, a spokeswoman for the Kellogg's Korea company, said, every time we launched new cereals or had promotional events, online communities would repeatedly ask us for the flavor. Shaka's success was so monumentous that on the day it was announced earlier this month, it surged past North Korea's bombing of an inter-Korean liaison office to become the top trending topic on South Korean social media.
That's just fucking depressing.
Oh,
that's just so sad. Good God. The fact that that overtook like an attack.
Here's one of the tweets. The cheating forces of Checky were ousted and Mr. Chaka's 16-year struggle has finally come to an end. A TV advertisement apologizing for the delay features a small child whose dreams of onion cereal were crushed. Promotional materials included a faux political poster with the image of Chaka over former President Barack Obama's "Yes, We Can" slogan. And if you see the commercial, it literally spoofs, you know, the dudes dancing with the coffin.
Yeah,
that meme.
Yes,
literally spoofs memes in this trailer.
Oh my God!
Where do I get to see the Green Onion Chex trailer?
You can. I will send you the.
It's gotta be on YouTube.
It is on for sure. It might be on YouTube, but it's for sure in this Reuters article. Limited edition cereals are usually on sale for about 3 months, but that could be extended if sales are strong, Kim said. The company has been working on developing the cereal for 15 years, but couldn't figure out the right onion flavor. When it called for 50 early testers, they received 14,000 applications. Traditional breakfast cereals are often savory and even spicy, and many people seem to envision the onion flavor as a potential bar snack with beer rather than with milk. Yeah. I had adult-like taste in food since I was young, so I love local food with garlic, green onion, or kimchi, said food blogger Lee Soo Jeong, 24, who voted for Chaka as a child and was an early taster. Her verdict? The green onion flavor is just too mild.
And she was disappointed. It's like freaking Duke Nukem 3D coming out.
Yep.
And everybody was just disappointed.
If you watch the trailer, it's really funny. One of my favorite is there's a clip of a guy on YouTube trying it. And he seems to have the opposite opinion. I'm watching it with the subtitles on. He says it has a strong smell and tastes like green onion, and he's eating it out of a cereal bowl with milk, and it looks so gross, and I want to try it.
The closest thing my brain does is like, what if you put Funyuns in milk? Like, that's where my brain goes.
But that's like garlicky, right?
Like Funyuns?
Onion flavored, but like it has like a...
Yeah, but like, what? Yeah, like, but I was trying to figure out, like, what kind of flavor would you give a cereal? Like, you're going to put it in milk.
Green onion. I
would eat it out of a cup. I would eat it all day, like, as a snack.
Like a snack.
In milk, it makes no sense.
Like a dry snack.
But I get it as, when you think about it as Chex Mix, I think it actually works with Chex Mix. Yeah.
I think that's actually a solid Cheetos addition. And shit? Yeah, come on.
Yeah.
Just not with milk.
It's just a weird, I do think it's hilarious that they tried in 2004 to troll the Chex company, and the Chex company was like, chocolate wins. And then for 16 years, they kept doing this, and it took until 2020, the year of years, the year where we finally see everything clearly. It took until this time.
They saw things clearly. Like,
yeah, you can have it. And like I said, at the beginning of the article,
I need
it sold out in 2 days.
That's nuts.
I need to try these.
If you see that, my favorite part is if you look at the, let's see if I can send you the direct. Even on the, how do I even show you this? How do I show you this image? Even on the image of the Chex, there is this giant green onion Chex in the background. He's pushing the chocolate Chex out of the way. That's funny.
Great.
Hold on. I'm just going to save this image as...
Somebody give me a bag of these, please.
Yeah, if you can send... Oh, well, while we're getting out of here, this is a mini-sode, so a little behind the scenes. Jesse, you're going to be getting a painting soon, sir.
Yeah, ooh. Cool. So thanks for that. I saw that. I'm so excited.
You sent me a haunted doll, dude.
Whoa. One of us sent you a haunted doll.
Both of your names.
Why am I being punished for this?
We both decided. Don't try and go back. Retcon history.
Don't worry, Alex. Somebody else has another haunted item they've returned to Hawk to me. I'm going to get that sent to you.
Welcome.
So don't.
Cool. Yeah. Cool. I'm so excited.
Don't worry about it.
What if it ends up on fire for some reason?
Then we know that the picture was filled with hate, like he said.
Yeah. What if I set it on fire?
The picture is filled with hate?
That's the problem. Every time they go into the room, they said they like gets cold in the picture. It's a picture of flowers that was in the house when they moved in. They said it's been there since they moved in, and it just, the room feels wrong.
Maybe
it's
and the Shandor's picture feels
flowers. Like flowers. There you go. It was I don't even get that reference.
You will.
But all right. Sweet. When we watch movies one day. Yeah. All right. I'm excited. All right. That's it for this mini.
You never watch any movies.
I know.
Oh my God.
References just go whizzing by, dude. Next week will be no minisode. We'll be back to the week after with a minisode. Don't worry. Next week is a minisode compilation for the regular folk. And we'll get back to it the week after. That's it. So thanks, guys. Thanks for listening. We love you. And we'll see you next time.
Bye.
Goodbye. Bye, buddy.
Look, I'm not sure how you feel about it, but I feel like I'm always staring at a screen these days, now more than ever when I'm stuck in my house like I am. And whether you're an avid news watcher or you're in serious need of a distraction, sometimes unplugging is actually a little easier said than done. And one of my favorite ways to rest my eyes and still get access to all the cool things that I'm dying to listen to and pay attention to is by putting Raycon wireless earbuds into my ears and listening to something great. Whether you're catching up on your favorite news podcast, binging an audiobook, or powering through your workout with a pumped up playlist, a pair of Raycons in your ears can make all the difference. They sent me a copy of their E25 Raycons. I've been putting them in. They do not fall out of your ears. It's pretty crazy. I've been using with my iPad to teleconference. It has been literally night and day in terms of things like my dog barking or people working on my house, you know, taking advantage of the fact that not that many people are outside. You know, having the things right in my ears, it's really made it a lot easier for me to function in my day to day in terms of my relationship with technology. There's no dangling wires or stems to get in your way. Raycons come in a range of stylish colors, but always with a comfortable in-ear fit for a more discreet look. Raycons are built to perform anywhere and anytime with water and sweat resistant construction and Bluetooth that pairs quickly and seamlessly. I swear, I literally just opened my little Raycon pill. I checked the Bluetooth screen. They were ready to go. Within 15 seconds, I was using them. It's pretty crazy. And with enough battery life for 6 hours of playtime, you can unplug for a while. And the best part, Raycon makes great sound accessible to everyone with wireless earbuds starting at half the price of other premium audio brands. And now Raycon is offering 15% off for all Chaluminati listeners. And here's what you got to do to get it. Go to buyraycon.com/CP. That is it. You get 15% off your entire Raycon order. So feel free and grab a pair and a spare and another one for your grandma and your auntie and your dad and anybody else who's complaining about not being able to hear you on those teleconference calls that you're all doing. That's 15% off at buyraycon.com/CP. Again, that's buyraycon.com/CP.
Hello, my little Chaluminauts.
No.
And welcome back.
Still not cool.
It's, dude, we've been doing this for so long.
Yeah, so still gonna call you out on it. The day I don't is the day I get in trouble with the internet. I'm not gonna. I don't want to be part of your creep show.
Jesse,
no,
I can't believe you just didn't express your disapproval.
Oh, I will. You don't need to. You don't need to say that. I always will.
That's why I'm changing my review on iTunes from 5 out of 5 to 4 out of 5.
You know what? Still good. Still all right.
Anyway. I don't know what you guys brought today, but I got something a little true crimey this time around.
I want to talk about Poe stuff. So
I have the official sequel to the Poe episode. Do you want to save it for the end or do you want to do it first?
I've got like a Poe follow-up thing too.
So let me get mine out of the way because mine's not remotely Poe related.
Okay.
I just want to ask to all of our German listeners.
Oh boy.
What's happening? Is everything okay? And why is this the third cannibal in like 5 years that has been arrested in Germany? Remains in German murder case show signs of cannibalism. Berlin prosecutors say suspect in death, a 44-year-old man, had interest in the subject. German prosecutors say there's evidence of cannibalism, the killing of a 44-year-old man whose remains were found in Berlin. A 41-year-old man was arrested at his home this Thursday on suspicion of murder with sexual motives close to the site where the victim's bones were found. Quote, the suspect had an interest in cannibalism. He searched online for the topic. Yeah, he searched online for the topic quite often.
Okay.
On November 8th, a walker had chanced upon the skeletal remains of a human leg on a field on the northern outskirts of Berlin near the border of Brandenburg Gate. Oh. On the bones, investigators discovered bite marks though they said it was still unclear if they were human or from an animal. The remains were those of a 44-year-old high-voltage technician who had gone missing from his shared apartment in Berlin's Lichtenberg district on the 5th of September. And it goes on to say that the I think the looks at the biting marks, they potentially are from human. And I just want, like I said, this is like the third cannibal in like a few years. All right,
let me just stick up for Berlin for a hot moment. Berlin, you are a great ass town. Don't let anyone tell you otherwise. Every time I've been there, amazing. The people are vouch. Great.
I like Berlin. It was beautiful. It was kind of sadly beautiful in a way, evocatively beautiful.
In 2006, the Rottenberg cannibal happened. And then in 2015, the German police officer was convicted for murder and killing a man he met on the internet and then ate him.
Berlin has a streak of very, you know, like a liberal streak to it, a sort of like a F the man streak. And frankly, nothing says more F the man than eating a person. So I feel like
they're saying eat the man in that case.
You know, true. Yeah. Well, I mean, I'll eat the rich. The man, I'm just saying, you know, so you got to work your way up.
What if the secret is that like 45% of people in Germany are delicious? Just cannibals.
What if
there's just a whole, like a whole culture of cannibalism, and it's all just
they're just like 45% of the Germans are secretly delicious.
No, it's like it's Blade, just, you know, like what if it's just below the surface, like some kind of fucked up Harry Potter
maybe, dude,
situation.
It's just weird. It's just weird because I feel like cannibalism isn't something we see in America all too often.
Look, I don't want to start saying something like that because then somebody's going to hit me with the Google links to like 45 cases of cannibalism in my hometown.
And don't send me your personal pictures of your own cannibalistic tendencies either. I don't need them in the inbox. I will delete them. Just leave
we're tired of it. Okay, cannibals.
Yeah, I'm tired of your weird shit.
Just be aware, cannibals, that you don't have to eat your friends, because this week on November 20th, a lot of articles came out about how there's a thing called human steak, which is something that you can grow.
Yeah, I'm looking good.
Is do-it-yourself meal kit for growing steaks made from human cells, recently nominated for Design of the Year in the London-based Design Museum. A thing that could happen in the future.
Like super good. Like 1,000%.
I'd rather eat a thick liquid made of bugs than a human steak.
Oh, that's so weird. It's so weird.
Would you eat it? Would I?
Yeah.
You know what? Here's the thing. If it was like, all right, I'll be real. If it was on a dare, I'd have to, by law.
It's got to be a no.
By dare, I'd have to. I'd have to do it. If someone was like, what if it was just put
in front of you as an option? Like, you have an opportunity here.
No, if it was like my option was a delicious steak or genetically grown man meat, I'd be like, nah, I'm good.
That's another awful part of it. Okay, like, I'm an adventurous eater. You know what I mean? I've had whale. I've eaten balut. I've eaten all kinds of bugs, all manner of bugs and worms. Human flesh, real or not, is like, oh man, I don't know. That's the forbidden fruit, man.
I just thought up a joke, but I'm going to, you know, it's a human flesh joke and eaten, but I'm going to just keep it to myself. Hey man,
that's what the chill minis are all about. That's
chill,
what,
chill minis. Chill mini after dark, baby. Hot cha-chow. Hot cha-chow. But here's the deal. Cannibals say that human meat tastes the most like pork. Like this most similar tasting meat to human is pork. So you know that. You know that steak's going to be good. It's going to be like a pork, big man-sized pork chop.
I'd still rather have, I don't know, like a nice chicken breast or something than a pork.
Than a Jesse breast?
I got to be healthy. I got to be healthy.
What if you could just make your own food out of your own cells?
Here's the thing. If you could, we would have been doing that for all of history, and we'd be fine with it. We'd be totally fine with it.
It's so mentally repugnant to me to like walk myself through the process of doing it that I don't know that I could. I don't know that I could eat fake human flesh like that. I don't know that I could do it.
I'm not cool with eating fake anything, right? It seems weird to be like, yeah. I mean, like, I don't know.
I don't mind beyond because it's not trying to be anything.
No, exactly.
But it's not trying to be like, it's a vegetable thing rather than it's meat that we made meat.
Oh yeah. No, thank you.
That is a whole nother level. I'm like, nah, I don't trust that.
Grown meat. Yeah. It's fucking scary, dude. That's like how you're going to like grow five arms later or something.
Well, here's the thing. Maybe I'm wrong. Cause I do kind of think I'd love to have extra body parts. I would like to have a storeroom somewhere of like, look, I need a kidney. Okay. Here's your own. Right.
I mean, in that context, I'm a lot more willing to negotiate, you know. But in the context of like, I grew this, eat it. It's a human. It's human progeny, but it's not alive, but it's meat from a human. I would be like, this is like a game that I like. This could be like in a video game where they make you eat this and it would be like the scariest part of the game.
But again, on a dare, if money was involved, I'd eat that. I'd be like, all right. I'd do it and be like, this is for you, America.
Oh,
for America.
Oh, my God.
Look, I'm just saying, when we go overseas, Alex knows, every time we're in the UK, some Brit or some, like, you know, Scottish dude is just like, we're better drinkers than you. It's like, all right, let's fucking do this. All right, for America, we gotta show
up. I have a spoiler for you about who's the best drinker. It's me. You can't beat me. I've never lost.
Not me.
I'm the last one awake every time. Every night, time, I watch you all. I see you all off to bed every night at CoxCon.
Although, every once in a while, Davis is the guy who just, like... It's Davis, 6 a.m. Davis, and you're like, are you still up?
Davis is wild because he'll be like gone at midnight. And then at like 6:15 a.m. he'll be like, hey guys, what's up? You know me, it's your boy Davis. And it's like, where did you come from? And he's like, I've been around. And it's like, why do you smell like cigarettes? He's like, I don't know. Shut up. Where were you?
Oh, it's so funny.
I can't wait to travel again. Man, I miss the world. Being in this apartment sucks. I need to get out.
It's going to be so good to see people again.
Yes, I agree. All right.
That was a tangent about cannibals. Anyway,
you want the sequel to Poe? I will give you the sequel to Poe.
Well, before you sequel us.
Yes.
Can I hit everyone with a little factoids about Poe really quick?
Hell yeah.
Please. Of course. Persuade me.
Everyone associates absinthe with Poe, right? It was his big drink. It was something that everyone just figures was part of who he was. And for a lot of history, people assumed that the hallucinogenic properties of absinthe were what gave him these crazy ideas for stories. Well, absinthe, for those of you who don't know, is a sort of green liquid that has a black licorice flavor to it. And what they would do at the time is they would add sugar to it. And the
you've probably seen it happen at a bar, like where they take the sugar in the spoon and pour the absinthe over it. You've seen it. I'm sure you've seen it.
Well, the absinthe we have now is a little bit different than the absinthe that existed in the 1800s because it was banned. Especially in the United States and most of the world, because it had a thing called thujone. And it
has
essentially,
to do with wormwood?
Yeah, it's essentially wormwood. And it just to give you an example, absinthe became so popular in Europe that 5 o'clock was called the green hour, which is when people would like sit down and just get wasted. And so... Man. Absinthe addiction because it was sweet and it had to, it was like you're
one. I can do like one maybe with one. It is an intense beverage.
Absinthe, I've never tried absinthe.
Absinthe has anywhere. I mean, most absinthe is like 120 something, but it goes up to like 150 proof.
I love licorice and it rips me up. Like it is
that sounds
not
like borderline moonshine style type stuff.
And so. This thujone, what it would do is it would apparently cause anyone to drink excessive amounts. They would have hallucinations and stuff. But there have been tests and there's been things in the past where they're like, look, we looked into this and it really, you'd have to have crazy amount for it to actually do that. There's no real evidence that it did that. And so that probably is just, you know, it seems neat that he... Yeah.
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 What is more likely is that anyone who was drinking absinthe because of the sweet factor, because it had this taste at the time. At the time, black licorice was a popular flavor. Like that is a taste profile that people loved, which today
I
like
it too.
Oof. and
it's very
so
old fashioned tasting.
Yes, absolutely. And one of the crazy things about it is because of the flavor, it reminded me, every article I've looked up about this, it reminds me of one time I was in college when I worked at a radio station and I went to my boss's house for a party and he had a bartender and the bartender was like, my man, I make a thing called the El Presidente. And I was like, awesome. It tasted like cherries, like a cherry Kool-Aid. I must have had 13 of those damn things. Needless to say,
my God.
Puked on my boss's car, got fired the next day. Don't do that. So
that's his
this
fault,
is
not yours, okay?
This is what I'm saying. This is a drink that during this time period, you didn't just have one. Most drinkers of absinthe were known to have double digits worth of absinthe over the course of a day.
That's insane. Just
that's a lot.
150, 120, 150, 98, I think is the lowest proof. Like the insane amount of alcohol in your system. And I can understand
that's why John Leguizamo is jacked up in that Moulin Rouge movie.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. The way people would react when they drank this alcohol is it would mess them up. And it wasn't because of the wormwood or whatever. That was like such a minuscule amount, but it like gave it that, like Alex said, a romance to it. Really, it's because it's high proof and people dangerous. Just
jacked up on liquor.
And so that's a little thing to consider next time someone's like, Edgar Allan Poe was hallucinating ravens in his bedroom. It's like, no, nah, he was just wasted.
He was fucked up like Stephen King writing Cujo, bro.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Sequel me, Alex.
Okay. So this is the promised sequel. It's a lot more lighthearted, like I said, and it all starts back in the first half of the 20th century. According to some eyewitness accounts, it was happening all the way back to the 1930s. But the first time that everyone can agree on was sometime between midnight and 6 a.m. on the morning of January 19th, 1949, the 100th anniversary of Poe's birth. Okay. So it was 100 years after his death. It was his 100th
death birthday. Anniversary. If it'd be 49, maybe, yeah, because he died in 49.
It was the 100th anniversary of his death on his birthday, if you know what I'm saying. It was his birthday the year 100 years after he died.
Gotcha. He was born in 1809. Yeah.
Got you.
Well, he was born in, is that right?
Says he was born 1809.
Yeah.
You're saying the day it's his birthday 100 years after after he died.
He died October 7th, 1849. Yeah. He was only 40. Damn.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, maybe that's kind of, is that old for the 1850s?
Not really. No, he was not. He definitely died early. Okay. So this happened 100 years after he died quietly in an all black suit with a white scarf and a big top hat. A masked man visited the grave of Edgar Allan Poe and left three red roses and a bottle of cognac every year. From 1949 until 2009. Right? So at first, just a few people would show up and watch it go down because somebody saw it happen that first time and they were like, is it going to happen again? So they showed up and they watched and it slowly drew a crowd. I feel this is already a very weird thing to do for something that was obviously meant to be like private and intimate. Mm-hmm. But by the end, it was almost like a ceremony, almost like waiting for Santa Claus or something. With like cosplayers from characters from Poe's books and all kinds of other weird stuff that you would not expect to have at someone's grave on their birthday. That seems a little disrespectful, but you know, whatever. Like they're just there to be enthusiastic about Poe. So whatever. Nobody knows for sure what the significance is of the cognac because Poe didn't like drink this drink. And it's never mentioned in any of his books. You know, like maybe you'd want like an Amontillado if you were going to do something from Poe's like writing. But the popular thinking on the roses is that they represent everyone buried at the gravesite, which is Poe, his wife, Virginia Clemm, and his mother-in-law, Maria Clemm, who he lived with up until his death. Also, the Poe toaster, as he is called. Sometimes also left notes along with the traditionally expected rose and cognac. And an example people often give as to the contents of most of these notes and how they went were things like this one note that said, Edgar, I haven't forgotten you, right? So it's like a bunch of notes like that for the most part, just sort of
gotcha.
Schmaltzy, sort of slightly nostalgic notes about Poe. But in 1998... the note said, the torch will be passed, which implied seemingly that maybe the tradition of leaving this stuff was going to pass maybe from a parent to a child or something like that. And indeed, after 1998, the toaster was reported to be a younger man. So a lot of people assume that it was this guy's son that took over for him as the toaster. And the only way we know that this second toaster was even legitimate was that the curator of the Poe House has a secret signal worked out with the real toaster that this guy also knew and continued, if that makes sense. So he actually had a sort of secret way of being like, I'm the real one. I know what's up, which is crazy. But like I said, things ended for good in 2009, and it didn't go out on a high note either. It just sort of like got slowly weirder and weirder as it petered out. So like I said, the first time that there was any sort of like change was in 1999 when this younger person came. And in 2001, days before the Super Bowl between the New York Giants and the Baltimore Ravens, here is the quote was, "The New York Giants, darkness and decay and the big blue hold dominion over all. The Baltimore Ravens, 1,000 injuries they will suffer. Edgar Allan Poe evermore." Very weird, because not only was that the first time that the toaster had ever mentioned anything like going on in current day, it also seemed like he was supporting the New York Giants over the team from Baltimore that's named after fucking Edgar Allan Poe. So I don't know. It was pretty weird. And then in 2004, during the Iraq War, when everybody in America was mad at France and we invented the stupid ass freedom fries thing that we were doing for a while, apparently the toaster was now one of those people, and left a note that said, "The sacred memory of Poe and his final resting place is no place for French cognac. With great reluctance, but with respect for family tradition, the cognac is placed. The memory of Poe shall live evermore." So, yeah, people were kind of turned off by the weird new toaster, who absolutely did not fit with the like sort of like Barnes and Noble gothic romantic version of the toaster that they were sort of imagining. And apparently sometime between 2005 and 2008, the last couple of years, the curator found a note that was so upsetting that he actually lied and said there wasn't a note. And he still hasn't told anyone what that note said, except that he said that in hindsight, he should have known that it meant it was all over. And finally, after 2009, he never appeared again. And though many pretenders have attempted to replace the original, that never officially happened until 2015, when the Maryland Historical Society actually held a competition to find a replacement, who now does it in the name of city tradition. And I think still anonymously, like this guy showed up when they announced that he like showed up at the grave and like played on a fiddle in his mask and like went away. like said a little like quote and disappeared.
Did a little jig and bye-bye.
Yeah. So now he's like a sellout sort of like character.
Yeah, that's kind of a bummer way to end it.
Yeah, but there is one picture of the real original toaster that exists, and I have it right here for you. I will post it in the subreddit a little bit after this goes live, but this is the only picture that exists of the Poe toaster, and it's a very poor quality image.
Yeah, it is absolute shit, but at least we know he exists.
You can see, you know, you can see his hat, you can see his scarf, you can see he's got some sort of bouquet or something in his hands, maybe.
Yeah, he's like kneeling,
and maybe he put his cane up against the grave there. But that's this weird guy that came and toasted Poe for 50 years at his grave every year on his birthday that nobody knew who it was. Pretty wild that exists, huh?
Yeah, what a magical tale of a strange man who enjoyed cognac.
Yeah, thanks for the money, guys.
With a man who hated, it ended with the man who hated the New York Giants, or liked the New York Giants. Yeah, thank you for your money, everybody. We appreciate it. We will we'll be back next week with another minisode for you. Germany, get your shit together. And if you're that guy who leaves Kanye or does a little fiddle dance now, send us an email.
Let us know
what it's like to have that job.
Yeah.
I'd love to know what that job is like.
Put it on Dirty Jobs with what's his name? Mike Rowe.
Mike Rowe. Dirty job with Mike Rowe.
I want to know. I want to see the Poe Toaster episode.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.
Hello, my little Chilluminauts.
No. No.
Welcome back.
Yeah.
Another chill mini. Welcome back to it, Jesse. You know you enjoy the intro. That vanilla, that white chocolate voice.
You refer to yourself as white chocolate in private?
I do now.
That makes it even worse.
You know what's one of the best pieces of trivia about white chocolate?
It's bad.
It's not chocolate.
Yeah,
it's bad. It's gross. You teased us, Alex. So I'm going to hand the reins directly to you for this little mini-sode here. You've got a follow-up, a sequel to the episode of the trio of mysteries you gave us.
Oh, yes. So this goes back to what I was saying in the Voynich manuscript section of the episode. I was talking about there's a mystery figure that sold this book to Emperor Rudolf II of the Holy Roman Empire. And that person is a man called John Dee, who is super, like, you know, just notorious. He's sort of like a Rasputin-esque figure, like just like a historical occultist and sorcerer person. Like I said, he worked with Edward Kelly, I think the guy's name is, the like philosopher's stone, like transmuting metal into gold guy. And you know, there's some controversy over whether this guy ever actually owned the Voynich manuscript itself, but we know for sure that he owned another book called the Book of Soiga, which is also known as Aldareia, and it's a treatise on demonology written in Latin from the 1500s. Nobody knows who wrote it. Some say the devil. I don't know if that's true.
One can only hope.
Do you know about the Codex Gigas or whatever it's called? The giant Bible that was written by the devil?
What? I want that.
What? Dude, have you not seen the Ninth Gate?
That sounds sick as hell.
All right. Don't worry about it.
Is there a chapter on Power Ranger powers?
I haven't gotten to that part. It's just the Bible. It's just the Bible, but it's written by the devil.
What's the Holy Bible. Difference then?
I don't know. But that's not this book. This is the Aldareia. This guy was an advisor to Elizabeth I. He got this book in the 1580s. And most of the book is written in Latin. Dee could read it, no problem. There's all sorts of conjurations, spells, protection spells, formulas, hierarchies of angels and demons. But the final 36 pages of the book were just tables of Latin. And he realized that it was a code of some kind, but he never was able to solve it, even though he did call on Edward Kelly, his scryer, his crystal gazer, who he said he summoned the Archangel Uriel to come down and ask him about the meaning of the 36 pages. And the angel spoke directly out of Kelly's mouth, said the book came into existence when Adam entered paradise and that only Michael could read it. And obviously Uriel's not Michael. And the angel also said that the book was cursed and that anybody who deciphers the meaning of the tables would die 2.5 years later.
Very specific.
Very, very weird, specific curse.
That's enough time to let everybody in the world know what they transcribed to.
But John Dee died in the late 1610, sometime before 1620. The Book of Soiga disappeared after his death. Nobody knows what happened to it for a long time. But it popped up, like the name of the book popped up all over the place. But people were worried that it was lost forever until 1994, 400 years after John Dee died, when a copy of the book was found just in a pile of books in the British Library in London. It's the biggest library that exists. This person, Deborah Harkness, found it. She's an American historian and professor, and she wrote a thesis on John Dee, which is like amazing that she found that. And what's even more amazing is that a few months later, she found another copy in Oxford, in the Bodleian Library at Oxford. And as soon as it was announced that somebody had found it, a bunch of cryptographers were like, let me try and solve it. And people worked on it for about 12 years until 2006, when a man called Jim Reeds, who was a lifer Voynich guy, found an algorithm. I love
this Voynich lifers out there.
Dude, it's real. It's a real thing.
It also makes all of this very, like, you know, I'm the person who studies this, so I found two copies, or I'm the one who does this thing. So it always makes it a little bit like, did you just bring a book with you to the library and plant it?
At the same time, who would find it but an expert on it, right?
Yeah, exactly.
It's the Indiana Jones problem.
Yep.
But this guy, the Voynich guy, he found an algorithm for solving the tables and proved that they contain a list of astrological terms, magical incantations, and more angels and demons. The more forbidden knowledge.
Gotcha.
But Jim Reeds is still alive 12 years later, 13, 14 years later now.
Beating that curse. Appreciate it, Jim.
Even though he was able to figure out the code. But he read them, but he didn't use them. So maybe that's you know, the curse not fully taking effect.
That's how you make deals with the devil, though, right there.
But yeah, like, I mean, you got to remember the reason, it's pretty punk rock why these books were encrypted in the first place, right? Which is that, like, the knowledge, like, literally, it was forbidden knowledge. It's hard to imagine now, you know, in a Rule 34 world, that there's anything that's too inflammatory or wrong to be seen.
Yeah, desensitization has happened so hard to our generation.
Yeah. But I mean, it's just a different world, right? But, you know, back then, to not get in trouble, they'd fucking encipher that shit. So, you know, if you were cool, you could figure out the scary demons and spells. But if not, you know, you just had to have the base level. Or maybe, you know, they kept it back and then have like money and they're like, yo, yo, yo. Like, here you go.
He made a money sign. He rubbed his fingers together. You guys couldn't see it. Don't worry.
Yeah, like, pay me and I'll give you the code to the last bit.
Right. It's like a classic, like, exclusive club kind of thing, right? Like, if you, like, you can easily see somebody using that to extort money out of people.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
But yeah, that's the Soyga. That's the Book of Soyga.
Sweet.
Fascinating. Well,
what I bring to the table, something that we absolutely have to talk about.
Is it what I think we're going to talk about? It could be my thing too.
It's probably both our things. Is it that's
part
fine.
Two of an unfolding saga?
Did we even cover part one of the unfolding saga?
I think this saga has unfolded during the course of this week between the last episode and this episode.
Oh, yeah, right. So. We didn't have you're right. Okay.
Monolith that appeared randomly in the Utah deserts, was it? Or was it the Arizona deserts? It was a large rectangular thing that just basically the people who go helicoptering around looking for missing people. Utah Highway Patrol. They found this monolith as they were helicoptering around in the middle of nowhere. And they examined it. There's video of them checking it out. Somebody went to go check it out on Instagram after he figured out where the coordinates were. And it's like a thin metal that's like maybe aluminum that's riveted together. However, in between the time that it's been found and now, it's also now gone missing. And so we're kind of just left curiously wondering what the hell it was.
It has to be like the real life version of Gene Guy from The Mandalorian, right? Like, it was probably because the theory that I heard was that it was Westworld that left it there. And that they were filming.
Say something.
Well, they said they were filming in the area and that, like, maybe somebody on the crew left it. And I think that maybe they, like, saw it on the internet and they were like, oh shit. And they, like, went back and got it so they wouldn't get shit canned. But I don't know.
It's interesting. Because
it was just in a very remote area. Like, it wasn't a place people would find or see it normally.
No.
Right.
They were like looking for sheep or something. They were like counting sheep when they found it or something.
Yeah. They were doing something really, really bizarre.
In a helicopter. And they were like, what the hell is that?
Yeah. It's very bizarre. It looks like, what is it from? Was it a 2001 A Space Odyssey? The monkeys who find the monolith. Yeah,
The monolith. If we could just start that as a thing where someone just goes, the monolith, and everyone's repeating the monolith. That would be great.
It doesn't look like it was made of anything special. Like, somebody tried to put a magnet against it and it didn't stick. Like, there was no magnetic pull to it. Nobody knows. I almost feel like it might have just been an art piece. Like, somebody just being weird and waiting for somebody to find it, and just as somebody finds it, they planned on removing it.
A lot of crazy things it could be, mostly because in the desert there's a lot of crazy stuff, and not in like it's the desert, there's great, but like the U.S. government, everything from the Air Force to cable companies will stick stuff out in the desert and use satellites to, like, you'll see weird like boxes with multicolored stuff, like in the middle of the desert, And people will be like, what is this? What? But really, it's in space. A satellite is looking down, recalibrating based on that, off that box.
Yeah, it's like some. Yeah, exactly. It's just something.
It's like a geotag, but real.
Yeah. Exactly. And so there's a lot of things, and they stick in the desert because no one's there and no one's going to mess with it.
Exactly.
And so this clearly could be something like that as well. Like something somewhere use this as a marker, and there could be other markers like that out there that, you know, if you have a satellite or some sort of, you know, looking device that you're like, okay, yeah, pinpointed and, you know, firing whatever or changing whatever. Or
I wonder why they removed it, if that's what it was. Like, why the sudden removal? Because it was discovered.
Because everyone, probably everyone saw it and they were just going to go out there and mess with it.
Yeah,
I think it could be that there was something in it. The guy who actually went out there and took a picture of it, like the other guy who was like, here's how you get there.
Yep.
That dude, like, I think he said it like felt like a cardboard box, like it was hollow. Like maybe, you know, maybe it was like a personal item, stash, like somebody's or grave or something, you know, and maybe they moved it.
Or just like the memory of somebody. Yeah. I mean, we'll never know. It could be one of a thousand different things. It's just fascinating because just, you know, it sparked the curiosity of everybody for a couple of days
And they said it went into the ground a ways. Like it wasn't just standing there.
Yeah. I want to know now that it's gone, how deep it went.
Images that they show online, is this kind of like a little pyramid bit left over?
Oh, really?
Hmm. Yeah. Like it's I think people have put rocks next to it, but it looks like, at least from the stuff that's on Twitter, it looks like there is sort of a, like, I'll just send you guys this image. It looks like there's kind of a, I don't know, like a little pyramid sticking out of the ground, and someone has put rocks next to whatever remains. There you go.
I saw that little picture earlier. I didn't realize that was of the same site. Is that real?
It's the exact same site. Yeah. Tweet is from Brian Schnee. And I guess the photo is Kelsey Dockham, Canyon State Overland. And he's like, yep, it's gone.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy. I mean, have you heard of John McCracken?
Mm-mm. No.
So there's another theory going around about this that it has to do with John McCracken, who is a sculptor. He's like an artist. And if you just look at his work and you compare it to the monolith, like they look very similar, but if he did do it, he did it in complete secrecy.
At the same time, it's not like it's a unique shape.
No, but it's news because it's almost identical to this one piece, Fair, by John McCracken, which you can see there. Other than that, this one is like riveted on the side.
Yeah.
But I haven't seen the McCracken sculptures up close to know. According to his dealer, yes, he made it, obviously. According to his son, maybe he made it, but all his buddies are like, no way.
Huh.
But he died in 2011.
Oh, gotcha. So it would have been out there. I mean, it was in a very remote, untraversed area, so it's very possible.
It's not necessarily that he put it there. It's just that he made it, maybe, but who knows?
It's been confirmed that it was removed on the evening of the 27th. That's the last. Some guy, Ricardo Marino, went out there on the night of the 27th to take a look, and it was gone.
Crazy.
Huh. Yeah. That's nuts. Oh, the mystery, dude. The mystery.
It returned home.
Weird. Very, very bizarre. Well, that's fascinating. We still have no updates either on any of the jetpack men in LA yet, by the way.
There hasn't been another one.
So a few people sent us emails saying, hey, have you seen this jetpack hoax? But it's not the same thing. It's a totally different story in a totally different part of the country. The jetpack man is real. It is not a hoax. Like, that has been picked up by airport radars multiple times. The question of like who it is, I don't think has been answered.
Nobody's found any evidence, though.
It's weird.
Yeah, I don't know.
The world is full of mysteries, dude.
Yeah.
We love you guys. Thank you guys so much for directly supporting us here on Patreon. It helps us out such a great deal. We wouldn't be able to do this weekly without you guys. We got some really, really exciting new Patreon stuff coming up in the works. Just to give you some tantalizing tease, me and Alex have been talking about some stuff we're going to do. So be ready to see some stuff hitting in the next few weeks.
We'll
be back next week with some more Patreon minis. Goodbye, everybody.
Peace. The monolith.
The monolith.
Anyway, me and my wife were sitting outside indulging on our porch one night, enjoying ourselves. I needed to go to the bathroom, so I stepped back inside, and after a few moments, I hear my wife go, "Holy shit, get out here." So I quickly dash back outside. She's looking up at the sky in awe. I look up too, and there's a perfect line of dozen lights traveling across the sky.
Could just mean that you want that movie. I would dream of the goblin. It's one of my favorite toys. Go to sleep with the toy and wake up with it missing. And I remember this drove me insane because I was like, there is no way a dream goblin is stealing my toy.
Not good. I'm just going to go back to sleep and maybe it'll be fine.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.